This is Jeff Dunlap with Trapping Radio. I'm here with a real special guest. A lot of you guys aren't going to believe who I'm talking to right here. I'm at his house. It's R.C. Smith. He wrote Coyote Trapping with Smitty, Fox Trapping Encyclopedia. Smitty's Johnny Thorpe Interview with a Legend. I mean, he's wrote all kinds of articles. He's been in the trapping industry for... since a lot of us were even born. I knew him since I was a little boy. And so thank you for doing the interview with us. And I know it's going to be a real pleasure for a lot of guys to hear you and talk to you. I haven't seen you in a long time. So,
well, thank you, Jeff, for coming down and inviting me to do this. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it, too. Why don't we start off with starting how you got into the trapping in the beginning, and we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah. How I started, I still live in the same old farmhouse that I grew up in. I'm 70 years old, and we had four acres here. And my brother was the farmer. He had beef cattle, and he did raise grain to feed the cattle, and he would buy some of his hay and such. But it got to be my job when we would gather the corn in the fall to put it in the granary. Well, of course, the mice and the rats would gravitate to that. So it got to be my job to trap rats and mice. So I started out trapping rats and mice. And then my dad had been a trapper when he lived in the South. And so my grandparents had a 200-acre farm about 3 miles from here. So there was places to trap over there. So anyway, as we, I got trapping rats and mice in the granary, okay. My family had a place up between Taos and Hale at Sand Lake, and my family were hunters. So we would go up there in the fall. We would go squirrel hunting. Used to be the opening of small game season was the 1st of October. So I was up there squirrel hunting with my dad, my family, my uncles, cousins, and everything. And this is when there used to be a bounty system. And so a fox ran out in front of me, and out of self-defense, I shot it. There was no skill involved. But anyway, I shot it, and my dad took a shot at it too, but I think he probably let me get it. I shot it, and he says, you know what's that's worth? And I said, no. He says, well, there's a bounty of $5 on foxes. Well, to a farm kid, $5 was a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
So this was like in 60 or 61. So $5 would have easily filled your gas tank maybe a couple times. So all of a sudden I started seeing the dollar signs in front of me, and I thought, well, this is going to be just like gravy. All I have to do is go out in the woods and shoot a fox, get $5, blah, 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 blah. My dad worked in Chevrolet in Flint, and he had a friend that lived up in Wolverine. And he said, I have a friend that's a trapper, and he had retired up there. So his name was Arnold Bailey. And he had actually been there, his family actually homesteaded, and he was actually there when they planted and released the elk up in the elk country. And so we went up he actually lived in Afton, which is close to Wolverine. And so my dad told me, he says, you're going to show my boy how to trap. Well, you know,
mm-hmm.
What could he say? They were good friends.
Yeah.
So we went up there and he showed me how to make a dirt hole set. And what they did is they were trapping for foxes. Then they had coyotes, and the coyote bounty was 15 for the males, 20 for the females. And there used to be a $5 bounty on bobcats. I didn't get into that. And then I believe there was even a $25 bounty on timberwolves.
Huh.
And that was stopped, I believe, in the mid-50s or late 50s. So anyway, my dad retired from Chevrolet early because of health reasons, but he could, he's still functional. But he got out of the shop, and so, and I came along late in his life, so I was the last one at home. So he and I would go up to the cottage because they had National Forest, and we trapped up there for fox and coyotes and did quite well. And of course, my dad liked it, and he had a truck, and so it was a pretty good deal. We had a place to stay, and we got more and more acquainted, so I got more accomplished into trapping for bounty.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only need for any trapping. Other than there was a little fur market for like muskrats and mink, and then I had this farm over between here and Holly that was my grandparents. So there were foxes over there. There were foxes everywhere at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I trap them right here in the backyard. they were foxes everywhere, and they were worth $5 a piece.
And you're saying that it was like the mid-50s, something like that?
Well, that would have been in the late 50s, early 60s.
Uh-huh.
And so, obviously, I had all these places to trap, and at that time, there were not very many trappers. Nobody would tell you anything.
Yeah.
You couldn't learn, and so when we... And my dad was very interested in it, so he encouraged me, and so we learned together. And then, because there were very few trappers, the places that were having problems, especially with coyotes up north, the conservation officers and so forth, they loved it because they would get all the complaints of the coyotes attacking deer and sheep and da 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 da. So I was a star.
Mm-hmm.
So I trapped for bounty. And then when would have been like in the, let's see, mid-60s, the fur market started to go up. And so I think the foxes were worth maybe about $5. And just about that time that the fur market went up, the bounty system was dropped.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last time I bountied any foxes were in the mid-60s. Mm-hmm. They kept the coyote bounty on, I think, for about another 5 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. So like the early 70s is when that was dropped.
Yeah.
So then the fur market came about, so I started trapping for furs, and you know, I thought I was going to make a big fortune, which whatever, you know, it's like trying to find a gold mine, you know.
Yeah.
You still have the fever, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Trapper, that's like a lot of times me and Clint say that, you know, trappers have a gold miner's mentality. It's the, the next pan is the big one.
Exactly. You know, around the bend is where the beaver are going to be, or, so... I got into the fur trapping, and then I took instruction. My instruction was, like say, from, my mind's gone blank, Arnold Bailey up in Wolverine. That was very, very crude.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started to talk with everybody that I could. I talked with another trapper who was a friend of his, Laverne Johnson. He was an accomplished coyote trapper,
mm-hmm.
and he used to have access up in the club country. Up near Kern.
Okay. Up in my country.
Yeah,
up in there.
Yeah. Yeah. He would, they would have him in there because the coyotes were such a problem. There was no fur market. So he trapped behind gates in a lot of those clubs up there. And he was helpful, but he didn't give a lot of instruction or anything like that. But he would talk with you if you stopped by his house. So I talked to him. And then my dad and I went on a couple little camping, trapping trips. One time we went up to try to talk with Lennon in the UP, because Lennon had articles in fur, fish, and game.
Yeah.
And I read all those articles, but Lennon was, he was sick. He'd had a stroke before we got up there, and he couldn't even talk with people. I guess he was still functioning, but his wife, you know, she didn't even want him going in, us going in the house. Same room because he couldn't talk. And it had to be very difficult for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I would get whatever articles I could. And then, you know, when you see all the fur, fish, and game articles and this and that, and one of them I think is a picture of Johnny Thorpe in the Adirondacks, and in the back of his truck he's got 30 or 40 mink in one day.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that was quite impressive. And so I started taking instruction. In 73, I went out and I took instruction from Johnny Thorpe. And at that time, I think it was $50 a day, which was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so I went out and I spent 3 days with him, and we actually ran around up in the mountains. And he was a great one for blind sets, and especially for mink. But the mink were so thick up there that, I mean, you could almost set a trap and you could catch something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no disrespect to him, but I mean... And then he was very good at everything else.
Yeah, to catch big numbers, you got to have big numbers to catch. You
exactly.
Know? Nothing against anybody.
Yeah, and then I was impressed with some of the articles that O'Gorman had written, Craig O'Gorman. Of course, he trapped in the Midwest of Iowa and Nebraska, and then he ended up out in the West. And so, like in 1975, I actually flew out there for instruction. He had a summer trap line where he was doing coyote control on a lot of the sheep ranches, and the sheep ranchers were paying him. And so I went out and I spent 3 days, as crazy as it sounds. I flew out of Detroit to Billings and then to Glendive, Montana. He came and picked me up. very unusual experience, because what we did is we would go out on the ranches and we would stay in the bunkhouse every night and eat with the ranchers, and then we'd go out and run traps the next day at a different ranch. So I got a real taste of Western life and got to talk with people. And a lot of the young people that were taking over the ranches were about my age at the time. And they were fascinated about the Midwest and so forth. So I learned a lot from him. But the thing that I seem to sense of some of these big-time trappers is, like Thorpe and O'Gorman, they were respectful of my abilities and talents. Mm-hmm. They didn't talk down to me. They realized what I had done on my own.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were kind of at the same level.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, you do this, you do that.
Yeah.
So we were learning from each other. And then I also took instruction on fox trapping down near Marshall from Larry Rutherford, too.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a day. But, and then in 76, I thought, well, this is my chance to go out west, and I didn't have the family responsibilities. And so I quit my job. I had worked as an insurance adjuster, and most of my trapping had been like on 2-week vacations and after work and stuff like that. And so I got in touch with O'Gorman, and I said, could you line up some territory for me and I will pay you? And so what happened is I drove out to Montana in 76. That's when the first fur boom in my lifetime was like in 73.
Mm-hmm.
And then like in 76, there was another boom, and then 78. But anyway, I went out, and what we actually did, we actually ran around in the mountains for a couple days, and he camped out with me, and we explored territory for coyotes and everything. And and then I went out, I went trapping by myself. This would have been Wyoming and Montana. And I caught a few, and so anyway, and then in the late 70s, my cousin and his family moved to Arizona. So he said, you got to come out here. He says, there's coyotes everywhere. So I went out on like a month and a half, 2-month trip. I stayed with them. He knew some of the local ranchers. Excuse me, so I got bitten by the bug even worse.
Uh-huh.
And then I went back the next year and really hit it hard trapping in Arizona, because I was familiar with the territory, the animals, and I had a place to stay, which is real nice at night to come in and there's a table all set, and there's a place for you to have dinner with somebody.
It doesn't get any better.
Oh, no.
You know.
And these were my cousins. They were interested in what I'd done, what I'd seen that day and everything, mm-hmm. and I had electricity,
yeah.
so I could skin at night.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was wonderful. So that's how I, you know, got into that. And then a friend of mine had encouraged me to get involved in real estate appraisal. So I had a lot of background from my insurance work. So I was doing that a little bit, and then I got more and more into that. And then I had a real estate appraisal company until like the mid 2005, 2006, then the economy went down. There was no need for appraisers. Houses weren't selling. People that were getting divorces didn't get their house appraised because they couldn't afford an attorney.
No.
They couldn't move out. And so there was no demand. And so like 2006, we got quite a spike in the muskrat market. And so anyway, I seriously did some muskrat trapping in 2006. And since I learned a lot about colony trapping from Thorpe, is I did a video on colony trapping, because I was trapping exclusively with colony traps.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned how to use them, how to build them, and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, so, because in Michigan, your generation or mine, well, none of us grew up using colony traps because we couldn't use them in Michigan. You know.
They were legal in Ohio.
Yeah.
But of course, Thorpe had students that came from Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So he learned a lot from them.
Yeah.
So anyway, and then the economy went in the tank, and you know, it's just like, how am I going to pay my bills? I mean, like, I would be on the real estate business, I was like making as much in a year as what I would have made in a month. I mean, things were really getting tight. And yeah. I basically had to borrow money to survive. You know, I had to have a home equity loan to have some working capital and pay the bills. I mean, things were really tight. And so being a trapper all that time, off and on, and I heard people say how there was such a demand for nuisance animal control. So I went to a meeting of the Michigan Animal Damage Control Association, and it was a very active group at that time, and these were people from all over the state. Greg Shoemaker was the president, and he was a very active, and he went on to be the president of NUCOA. And Tim Julian was also, I think, the president of NUCOA after Greg.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to their meetings, and I thought, geez, I know more about this than these guys do.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a lot of young guys, and all they knew was get a cage trap and throw an apple in it.
Yeah.
That's all they knew. Yeah. I mean, they knew nothing about blind sets. They knew nothing.
Yeah.
And so realizing that I had to really refine my act, I went to a National Animal Damage Control seminar, and that was in Auburn, Indiana. And I can't remember the guy's name. His first name was Bill, but I spent a whole week there. Learned a lot from him refining some of the things. And then along the way, I had two sessions at the Trappers College, the Fur Takers Trappers College.
Because you were an instructor there too.
Yeah, I was an instructor there. And the first time it was out in Pingree Park in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the very first one. So they're just getting themselves oriented. And I was a student. I paid my way. But I helped on some of the instruction.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next year, it was at Land Between the Lakes in Western Kentucky.
Mm.
And I was an instructor, and what they did is they paired up two people to a group, and we each had like about 15 or 20 people. And we stayed in these barracks. It was a 4-H campground seminar type thing. And Larry Douglas and I did our group together. Larry was from Alabama. He was a big-time water trapper.
Mm-hmm.
He did a lot of beaver trapping, beaver snaring, excellent skinner. He hired out to a lot of people to do skinning and fleshing.
Mm-hmm.
So Larry and I had a group, and Boddicker was one of the main rollers, Major Boddicker, mm-hmm. in organizing that, and many people with Fur Takers. So that was an interesting experience, and the thing that I've learned over the years is the people that give instruction, they learn as much from their students as the students do from them.
Exactly.
Because you're, you know, and even in this nuisance control business, everybody has to be have to give you a one-up of how they did this or how they did that.
Yeah.
And so I ask them, well, how did you do it? What bait did you use for trapping woodchucks? And they'll tell me, and I'm just amazed. It may have worked once or twice for them. Consistently,
yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
But it's still interesting to learn. So I got more and more refined in that, and I thought, you know, this has got some potential. So being a promoter, as your dad would say, I knew how to promote things.
Yeah.
So I learned that, you know, I had to have like a uniform, which I have on now with my name on it, and I put my name on my pickup truck. And then I knew at one time we had a real newspaper here in Flint. I mean, it came out every day. I got to know the outdoor editor, David Graham, and I would feed him leads for stories because they're always looking for something to write stories on,
uh-huh.
Okay? So David Graham had done a couple of newspaper articles about me, and one of them was so good he won the Michigan Outdoors Writers Association Award for that year.
Huh.
And then it got syndicated, and that story ended up in the Chicago Tribune. Ended up in most, yeah. I mean, you got a star here.
Yeah, well, I knew that.
It ended up in a lot of the newspapers in Michigan. One of my friends who has a cottage up in Marquette, he says, there was a story about you in the Marquette paper. And I said, yeah, I believe it. And then a girlfriend who I used to see had a friend that lived in Chicago. And she said, that guy that you've been seeing that's a trapper, is his first name Dick? She says, yeah, so there's an article in the Chicago Tribune about me. So anyway, it was getting quite publicized. And then what I did, I was on Channel 12 TV. They interviewed me a couple times, Michael J. Thorpe.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was on radio shows. I got interviewed. And then the thing that really got me going, because I had a background in writing and journalism, and I was very active in the Methodist Church here in Grand Blanc, and I still am, I was the one who lined up speakers for a lot of the church programs and this and that. And I knew they were always looking for speakers.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew the people of the various groups, and I offered, I said, do you need somebody to come and talk to your group? So I went to church groups, I went to women's groups, I went to Rotaries, I went to Kiwanis, I went to business groups, and I'd give a presentation. They liked it because I had stories and have a warped sense of humor.
Yeah.
So this last month I did three of them, one to a women's group, and they loved it. And let's see, I did one to a church group and another one to a homeowners association. And then I had a little DVD that introduced my show, and one of them is me falling through the ice when I was beaver trapping. So they thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, I bet.
So anyway, that's what I did. And then, but when I would have these talks planned, like to a Rotary group or whatever, I'd get a hold of the people at the newspaper that I knew, and I said, send a reporter out here. This is going to be a good thing. Mm-hmm. So what they would do is they send a reporter. The reporter would write an article. So there would be an article in the paper like every month or so about me.
Huh.
And one of them
actually, and the key thing is a free article.
Yes, free. And some of them would be front page by their main reporters. And one of them actually had, she says, well, where can we do this? I want to take some photos. I says, cool. So she had me pose against my truck. So my truck has got my name and my phone number on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd be amazed how many people. I deal with a lot of retirees. I deal with a lot of single women, whether they're divorced, never married, or widows or whatever. And all of a sudden they're living in this house or condo, and they got a raccoon in the attic. They got a woodchuck digging under the porch. And a lot of them cut those newspaper articles and put them on the refrigerator. And they thought, I don't need him now, but someday I will.
Yeah.
And honest to God, I've been into people's houses, and they've got the newspaper article about me on the refrigerator.
Well, you can't beat that.
Yeah. And some of them said, I couldn't even figure out what your phone number was. And I looked in the article, and there's your truck with your phone number. So that's how, I mean, I promoted the hell out of it, is what
I
did.
Yeah.
But I'm very good at it. And people
it sounds like it.
Yeah. And I tell people, you know, that want a price, I said, I'm not the cheapest one around, I'm the best.
Yeah.
And then I got involved in Chamber of Commerce groups, and then there's a international group called BNI. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No.
Business Network International. And what they would do is they would accept a representative of one business. So they would have like one realtor, one doctor, one painter, one roofer, and so they could join that group. So I've been into about three or four of those groups, and then what I found out is I could go and substitute, and I didn't have to join the group.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be the only trapper.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't even, I mean, a lot of them didn't even know what a trapper was.
Oh.
But like I had a call this week from a woman that I met like 5 or 6 years ago, but she lived so far away, there's no way I could take care of it. But she remembered me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not the kind of person you forget.
Yeah.
Because I have a red hat, red suspenders,
yeah.
And I would tell funny stories. And
yeah.
So that's how I promoted it. So, you know, I got out there and I hustled, and it's been a godsend to me because basically it's a viable business. I paid my bills, and I'm not rich, but I can pay my bills. I love what I'm doing.
Yeah.
My health is still good.
Yeah.
I do water aerobics every year. That keeps me limber, not trim, but limber.
Well, limber is good.
Oh yeah, you know, crawling around up in those attics on roofs is not for wimps.
No.
So anyway, so that's kind of it in a nutshell. And as people say, you really love what you're doing. I said, yeah, I really love what I'm doing.
No. Been waiting your whole life to do it.
Yeah. And I'm not cheap.
No.
And I did work for a property management company until this last year, and then I guess basically I fired them. Is they handle all the condominium developments here in Genesee County.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found out is they would get the cheapo guys out there, they get it all screwed up, and then they would call me to get it straightened out.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the homeowners would tell me, they said, we've told them never send anybody out here except Mr. Smith, because mm-hmm. we want it done right. Because yeah. I take the skunks away without them smelling, And, you know, a lot of things that most people have no idea what to do.
No, the secondary thought when it gets screwed up, then it's the thought of they wish the skunk hadn't sprayed.
Yeah.
They didn't know beforehand.
Right.
You know?
But I'm very good in communicating with people and belonging to this organization, this MADCO organization and NUCOA, which is the national organization, I learned a lot of business angles. Mm. You know, I have a written contract.
Yeah.
I don't say, oh, I'll do this. People are very, I wouldn't call them crooks, but there's a lot of them you cannot trust.
Yeah.
You know, you do the dirty deed, you get it done, and then they're too busy to pay you, or they give you the runaround and say, I don't remember we were going to do that.
Yeah.
And some of them I've had to give them a copy of the contract, and then they just shut up and write me a check. So, I mean, and I've taken some to collection. Some of them had to hire an attorney.
Hmm.
But I mean, I was very firm about it. I do them a good job, and I lots of times do more than what I plan to, but I learned you can't trust anybody.
No.
Sorry, but you can't.
No.
A lot of people you can.
Yeah.
But a lot of them you really have to be very stern about. It's just, I'm not a parent, but it's almost like raising kids.
Yeah.
You've got to make sure they do what they're supposed to do, or else they pull little games.
Yeah. No, there's people out there, if they get the opportunity to stick it to you, they're going to do it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because, I mean, they try to do it with the electric company, they try to do it with a plumber, construction, and an ADC guy is no different to them.
Yeah.
They don't care if you pay your bills.
No.
You know?
They're crooks, and they go through life not paying their bills.
No, if a man comes and does work for you and you don't pay him, you're a crook.
Yeah.
You know? Just spade to spade.
Most people are decent, but for trappers that are thinking about getting into the nuisance control business, it's not a trapping business, it's a people business.
Yeah.
And it's people business that have animal problems.
Yeah.
And you gotta learn that real quick, and so you gotta probably size people up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either on the phone or when you get out there, can you trust them or can you not trust them? Because I've had checks bounced, I've had checks stopped. You know, some of them just flat ass don't pay.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, that's all a waste of your time because you can't afford to be going to small claims court and everything else.
No.
Trying to collect a couple $100.
No.
And they know that.
Yeah.
So that's how I got started in it. That's how I'm still doing it. And during the summer months or the peak seasons, you know, I'm running 7 days a week. I really am.
Hmm.
It gets to the point where I literally get worn out. Hmm. People that have been serious trappers understand.
Yeah.
That you can't hardly open your mail, you can't go to the bank to cash the checks,
yeah.
Can't do your wash.
No.
I do wash my clothes.
But just, I mean, for promotional purposes.
But I mean, you know, you get so busy and so worn out that it just gets overwhelming.
And you're in a good area for it here. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of people, but it seems like you're like here, you know, you're still kind of out in the country a little bit, it seems like, but, you know, you still got people around.
Yeah. And the thing, too, is I grew up in this area, so I know a lot of people. A lot of people know me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've learned a lot. I made contacts with the local police chiefs because they will get the calls, and they will refer people to me. And you know, growing up in an area is pretty hard to duplicate that. If somebody just goes into XYZ state and say, I'm going to start this nuisance control business, maybe they can, maybe they can't.
Yeah.
And would people trust you to even come to their house or come in the house?
Yeah. If you were just going to move, you know, like as a Yankee going to move down to, say, Alabama, you know, if somebody, a timber company has problems where they ain't got nobody else, yeah, you'll work. But to deal with the individual people with a different accent and stuff, not that they ain't nice people, because, I mean, the Southern people are nice. But you just don't fit in there,
right.
You know.
Right.
I mean, you're different.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be the same way in reverse, you know. And,
yeah.
I imagine it's, you know, just like the trapping industry as far as lures and baits and supplies. You know, in this business, you know, the word gets out that your word's good and you do a good job. Or you do shit job and you lose business because of it,
right.
You know. And I would imagine that's, you know, you do a good job and that's why, you know, you get referrals from that. And
right. About half my clientele are minorities or blacks. Mm-hmm. I happen to be white, in case you didn't notice. And but I grew up in a business type of atmosphere where I dealt with all kinds of people. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of black people that don't like and don't trust white people. Mm-hmm. But like I say, about half my business are black people.
Yeah.
And so if I've done a good job, you know, they'll tell their friends. I know there's a black lady in Flint where I've trapped woodchucks. And I use a lot of blind sets. I use a lot of body gripping traps. Don't have much luck with baiting them at all. Mm-hmm. And so she told me after I'd been there the second year, because they were undermining her porch and everything else, she says, some of my friends said, why do you hire him? Why don't you hire Billy Bob, who's half the price? And she said, because Mr. Smith catches him.
Yeah.
So, you know, she doesn't like paying the big price, but she wants me back there because I'll do the job.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because you figure they got to come back 2-3 times and the job's not done correctly. They got more money invested in it. Yeah.
But I hear this over and over. I think one of the, a couple of stories that I remember, pardon me if I'm talking too much.
No.
Is this lady in it, and Grand Blanc is a pretty affluent area of the county. So when I started marketing, I went to the areas that have money that can afford me. Mm-hmm. I can go to the lower income or ghetto areas, and they have animal problems, but they can't afford me. Mm-hmm. Now, there's some people that live there that can afford me, but generally, like Grand Blanc, Fenton, Flushing, and some parts of Flint, they can afford me. Mm-hmm. I'm not cheap. But I remember there was a lady in the Grand Blanc area that had problems with woodchucks, and she had a lot of them. She lived along the expressway, so the buggers could dig along the ditches and so forth. And so she hired a local company, and they immediately came over and they set cages and they did all this conventional stuff. And she says, Mr. Smith, can you trap woodchucks? And I said, yeah, I'm pretty good at it. She says, well, I've hired somebody else and they haven't caught a one. And I looked out the other day and there's a woodchuck sitting on top of his trap. I figured, you know, whatever I do, I can't be much worse than that.
No.
So anyway, they had like some pavilions around where there'd been a swimming pool where they'd had family picnics and this and that and so forth. And I just figured out where they were running. It wasn't just the question of setting a trap in front of a hole. You know, you could see paths, you could see where they're going under a fence. You could see where maybe they were running along the edge of a building. So, and I think I did set some cages. And I got to be using like the 8x8 cages. You could use them as efficiently as what you can in 220 or something like that, if you know how to do it. Mm-hmm. So I set one like at the edge of this building. And she called me up. She said, Mr. Smith, you caught one out there. And he said, and she says, there's no reason for that. There was no reason for him to go in the trap. And I caught him, but, you know, and she was so impressed. And then I remember another job over in Fenton.
You called that one your shock and awe set?
Yeah. And another one over in Fenton where this fellow had a nice in-ground pool and he owned a small manufacturing company. And the woodchucks were going under the fence in some places. And then other places, they were too smart to do that. Mm-hmm. Well, where they were dig-unders and so forth, I could set the body grippers there. And it was safe enough. I mean, I'm very discreet. I just don't go around throwing 330s or 220s. The only 220s I use are like inside attics or on top of rooftops. And I put those like in kitty litter buckets and such. But, you know, and I tell people, I said, hey, I have a dog. I'm not going to hurt your pets. I know what I'm doing. So there was a place where there was two or three shrubs, not a whole row of them, two or three shrubs in the middle of this guy's yard. And so I said to him, I says, I'm going to catch one right there. And he's like, oh yeah, sure you are. You know, this is the first time I dealt with it. So I set like a 12x12 cage trap right there. And I got this big old honking woodchuck. And so he told me, he says, he went back to his plant and he told the people on the plant, he says, this guy is good. He says, this son of a bitch said, and I'm quoting him, he says, he told me he was going to catch one right there, and he did.
Yeah.
So all the people in the plant, they were quite impressed. So, but, you know, it's just trapping skills that the general public, they don't have a clue.
No.
And this is why the nuisance control is so good for trappers. Plus, there's so much anti-trapping sentiment that, you know, it's pretty difficult for the trapping industry to exist if it wasn't for nuisance animal control.
Yeah, no, because a lot of them people that don't know anything about trapping, you know, when they come in contact with you and you resolve a problem for them, then they see a purpose for the trapping. Otherwise, a lot of them, they don't see the purpose of why somebody like me has to go out and, you know, run and gun and just kill stuff just to do it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I see the reason, you see the reason, but just somebody living in Pontiac ain't got the slightest clue why they would do that.
Until
they deal with you, and then, you know, when somebody has a problem, their whole perspective changes on everything, you know.
This business group that I was involved in for many years, they would have regional meetings and, like, classes and so forth, and this, there was one, must have been 6 years ago or so forth. And what they would do is they'd have a break time where people could get acquainted and read each other's name tags and so forth. And this lady owned a floral shop and had like a greenhouse up in Clio. She came to me and she was real uppity and she said, "We have woodchucks around our greenhouse, but we don't need anybody like you because we take care of them ourselves." I thought, well, good for you, la-ti-da. So about a year later, guess who called? And she says, "Richard, do you remember me? That nice conversation we had?" She told me her name and her business. I don't forget. I remember everything.
Yeah, especially when you've been insulted.
Yeah. And I thought to myself, yeah, I remember it. I don't remember it being very nice at all. And she says, "Well, we have a problem." "Oh, really?" She says, "Well, there's a skunk in our greenhouse. And none of our employees will go out to the greenhouse and get the flowers to bring them into the shop. Can you help us as soon as possible?"
Did you tell her you got two problems? You got the skunk and you ain't seen my bill yet.
So anyway, I said, you know, I was a lot more desperate then than what I am now. And I said, yeah, I could do that. So I get out there, and what had happened, they had visqueen covering the hoops on this nursery. So the animals could either slit it or slide under it to go out there to the greenhouse. So it was kind of a cheap affair. And so anyway, I get out there in the greenhouse, and yeah, they had a skunk, but they'd had coons in there. And they were knocking all the flowers off the shelves. And so anyway, I told her, I said, "Yeah, you've got a skunk, but," I said, "I got to catch all these coons before I have a chance to catch the skunk. Because I can set some traps, but the coons are going to beat them to the traps. This is all live traps."
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I caught about half a dozen coons, and I got the skunk. And, you know, I know how to do it. I talk to the skunk. I get them calm down. I put a plastic sheet over them, and I explain to people. I said, "They're very nearsighted. You can get close to them. They're not aggressive if you do this right." So I took it out without it smelling.
Yeah, I always tell them, when I'm telling them how to do an injection on them, I was telling them, you talk to them just as sweet as you would your prom date, you know.
So. That's good, because I never went to the prom.
Well, you can practice that in case you ever get a chance.
Yeah, I have to keep that in mind. So she became a believer, and I actually did have a church up in the north end of Flint where they had skunks, and they actually had them get in the basement. I don't know. And I think, you know, a lot of people do some goofy things. They'll leave the door open in the summertime,
mm-hmm.
you know, to let it cool off or get a breeze, and these animals get inside.
Well.
And then they don't know where to go. So anyway, they had a skunk inside the church, in addition to some that were digging under the front step. And I think what had happened is there was a litter of skunks, and then one of them got inside, he got lost, and he died in there. And I remember I got a call on a Sunday morning, and they said, "Mr. Smith, you've caught a skunk, can you come out?" So this was like in August, and they didn't have air conditioning in this church. Mm. So they had the windows all open, and they had church in session. And I had a couple skunks there, and one of them was in a cage right underneath the window. And so I was just very quiet about it, and I got the tarp over them and pulled them out very slowly, took them away. They never even knew they had a skunk.
Huh.
So I came their hero real quick.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, those are people that, you know, pay you well, they'll tell other people about you, and just like this lady who was saying, "Yeah, but Mr. Smith catches him," she refers me to her friends.
Yeah.
So, I build a reputation, but I've treated people decently, too. I've heard some real horror stories where some of my competitors will come out and set traps. They don't even tell them they're taking the traps away. They're there for 3 days, take the traps away when nobody's home, and then the people will call them and say, well, I thought you were going to trap here for a week. And my competitors said, well, there's no animals there anymore, so I got to leave. Hmm. You know, so basically they took their money.
Yeah.
They didn't do the job completely.
Yeah.
And I try to give them more than what I promise. If I say I'm going to trap for a week, I may trap for 3 weeks.
Yeah. So, no, it matters when you're dealing to people. Your word's got to be good. You know?
Yeah, so it's gotten around that, you know, the referrals, and that's what I'm getting mostly are referrals from Fenn. You know, people I've dealt with maybe 5 years ago, and they're now that it's their cousins or their daughters have bought a house or something, and there's some things that I've gotten away from. I'm not real excited about going up on a 2 or 3 story house or the ladder work.
No,
that's young people's work.
Yeah,
and so I.
No, I wouldn't be thrilled about that. Cause no. I don't really care for heights anyway. Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, I've gotten acquainted with. I have a roofer that thinks it's cool to walk around in a 3-story house. I don't think it's cool. And then I have a carpenter friend who's a finished carpenter that can repair about anything. I can do some general things, but, and I have a builder's license so that if I have an attic, the coons have torn it all up, you know, the insulation and everything, mm-hmm. and they've crapped all over, they've chewed on the wiring. And I give them a little cartoon that I had a cartoonist made up showing the coons up in there and da-da-da. And, having been an insurance adjuster, I've told people, I said, now your insurance very likely will cover this, but you need to talk with them and find out why they do or why they don't. And I've helped a lot of people. I'm not an attorney, but I'd say, you know, ask them this or ask them that and help them get their claim settled.
Oh.
You know, an attic clean out, I think the biggest one I had was like around 20 grand.
Hmm.
So you're talking real money.
So just, you know, it would be... You know, I mean, that's like another benefit to your business, you know, that you have an insurance adjuster mm-hmm. background. So, I mean, say I showed up there at the job. If they had to choose between me and you doing it, say we did the same work, I mean, the benefit would be to go with you if I had insurance. And
they'd choose me.
Yeah, they'd have to. I mean, that would be the smart play.
Yeah, and you gotta look like you're professional.
Yeah.
I had a young lady, I don't know how old she was, probably in her 30s. In the Burton area, probably about 4 or 5 years ago, summertime, she said she had a coon underneath her house in the crawl space. I show up, I've got a uniform with my name on it. I give her a business card when I come to the door. It says who I am, my license number, my address, my phone number. I look very professional.
Yeah.
And they even have my name on my hat and the whole 9 yards. So as I'm there, here comes a couple of cowboys in a pickup truck. This is summertime. You know, they got Bermuda shorts on, T-shirts, and they barge in. They says, we're here to trap your raccoon. And she's like shaking her head. And I just went over and I said, well, here's my card. May I see yours? Oh, no, we don't have any business cards.
We ain't even got a license.
And it doesn't say anything on their truck. It doesn't say Joe's Roofing or hauling or
not
nothing.
Not even in the dust.
Yeah, yeah. Not even in the dust. Was a good one. So the lady turned to me and she says, what do I do? And I says, well, ma'am, I gave you my business card. My truck says my name. I have a license. And I said, these fellas say that they're waiting at the printer for their cards to come.
Yeah.
I said, you know, what do you choose?
Yeah.
So she sent them packing.
Yeah.
And you have to be careful with some of these big companies too, quite truthfully. They're not good people to do business with.
Yeah.
I run into that, some of the big national companies, and people don't know any better, and they will charge 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
What would be the going rate? People don't know any better.
No. And, you know, the thing is you, with the small, real small, you know, guy that doesn't know what he's doing just happened to have his uncle had a live trap. So he's, like in Michigan, you know, it's easy to get an ADC license. So, mm-hmm. you know, he gets a live trap. He don't know what he's doing. He can show up. You know, but the big companies, you know, there's no personal touch. The owner is not out there. When you go there, if you don't do a good job and don't get the referral, you're suffering.
Right.
The guy that owns that company,
yeah,
he doesn't even know he's suffering because his employees are doing a crap job. You know?
And a lot of these people, because I'm active in this community, I'll see them at the store, I'll see them at the bank, and this and that. It's just like I was waiting in line this spring. And I was just waiting there to put money in or get a check cash or something. Somebody came up behind me and started poking me in the back. And what the hell is this all about, you know? So I turned around, and it was the retired police chief of the city of Grand Blanc. And I said, boy, there's never a cop around when you need one. So, you know, knowing people, and that helps, because, you know, they say, you know, this guy's a good guy. He'll do the best he can. And if he doesn't, if he's not interested, he can tell you who to get.
No.
Because I don't do the bat work anymore. It's just, it's not my area of expertise in climbing up on the roofs and the big ladders. A lot of people don't understand to even move a two, you know, a ladder that big, you need two men. Because you got, that ladder gets away from you, put it through somebody's window or something, you got big trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably a lot different dealing with, you know, that compared to like dealing with trappers, you know.
Yeah.
It's like you could tell, that, like me, say, well, I know Johnny Thorpe, I know Craig O'Gorman, you know, and that would be as impressive. But you know, using the same mentality with some lady at the church, you know, that does it. So,
yeah.
You know, you got to play with who you're playing with.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm pretty well educated. I have like a master's degree, so I'm not a fool.
No.
You know, and as like some of the guys in our Michigan Animal Damage Control Association, Craig Shoemaker, he has a college degree. He's very well educated, but he does, you know, I talk to the person's level who I'm dealing.
Yeah.
And like I had a job over in Western Hills, which is a pretty upscale community. It's in the west side of Flint. And so a guy called me and he says, I've got a skunk dying in my backyard. So, you know, it's funny. I'm out there. And I ring the doorbell, I give him my card, and the guy comes with blue jeans. He's got like an old flannel shirt on at this mansion. And he says, it's in such and such and such a way. And I said, okay. So I go to the backyard, and there's a skunk laying there, not in seizures, but he couldn't move. Mm-hmm. So I put a tarp over him, wrapped him up, put him into the cage trap, put the whole works into my truck. And I came back to write up the work order and my bill. And the gentleman said to me, he says, what do you think happened when he came to the door? Well, for some reason, it just came out of me. I gave him all kinds of biological or medical terms about, you know, the type of laceration and what the symptoms were. I don't know. It just all came out of me. And I said,
no. You probably watched ER the night before.
And I said, now, if you're a doctor, you understand what I just said. And he says, I am a doctor, and I do understand what you said. Well, he hired me for like three other jobs because he realized I wasn't just some bumpkin.
Yeah.
You know, he was impressed with my skill level. Yeah. And so it's oftentimes the attorneys and the doctors, when I get talking with them, that treat with me with more respect because I've dealt with a lot of them and my insurance work and everything.
Yeah.
But it's sometimes the, how would I say, the factory worker, the construction worker that, they know more than me, and they have to tell me this and that. Or the person that's the internet geek.
Yeah.
They learned all this on the internet.
Yeah.
And then they tell me how to do it.
Yeah.
It's like, for God's sake, why don't you hire the internet to come out and get this handle? But, so it's a people business, you know.
And probably a lot of the doctors and lawyers, probably a lot of those have never done anything with wildlife. They don't know anything. Where, you know, the guy that the deer hunted, you know, shot a coon on his bait pile, so he's got a concept of
He thinks he knows everything.
Yeah. But no. Kayla, my daughter's boyfriend, Mitchell Obi, he's getting into the ADC part of it, and I told him, I said, I'll help you a little bit, but I don't have the mentality for it. I don't want to deal with them. I like dealing with trappers. They're kind of my people. You know, I mess with them real good, you know, because I was raised around them. But, you know, to go deal with homeowners, I just, you know, just not
drive you nuts.
Yeah, it's not my thing.
It drives you nuts.
And I know you can make good money doing it, even in our small area. Because the thing is, it's like I told Mitchell, I said, when he's getting into it, I said, what you can't do, because he's related to everybody in our area. I told him, I said, you can't give aunties whatever a freebie. You know, you can't, if she ain't got no money, if she needs her pipes fixed from a plumber, if she needs electrical, her house is going to burn down, she has to pay. You can't give freebies, and it doesn't matter who it is, you know, and So, but he's going to try and get into it, but I told Kayla and him, you know, this isn't a long-term operation for me. I got my own stuff going on.
Yeah, you got your own thing.
But I see it as a, like you, me and you was talking earlier, you know, a potential of, you know, people be able to make a living doing it and pay their bills and, I like them being around and in doing the type of stuff that I do. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not necessarily a fur trapper, but it's close enough for them to pass.
There's different. Everybody is suited differently.
Yeah.
And obviously, I was never a big time fur trapper like yourself and your dad. But I mean, I had moments.
Yeah.
But I mean, the nuisance control is something that my personality and my life situation meshes very well for me.
Yep.
You know, I'm 70 years old, I can still do this. There's a lot of the houses I go to, the people are in their 40s, and they say, oh, I'm going to go up in the attic with you. Well, hell, I don't want them to be on my ladder.
Yep.
I mean, they aren't physically fit to do that.
Yep.
So, I'm very fortunate, but it's not for everybody.
Yeah, I wasn't always at this fighting size I'm at now. You know?
Well, I'm amazed seeing you get out of that truck today compared to watching your video. It's just like two different people.
Yeah, 120 pounds.
That's wonderful. Yeah. That's
no,
good.
No surgery.
but you did it before you got older and you couldn't do anything about it.
Well, I'd see, like we were talking, I'd seen my dad get broke down where he couldn't do it. You know, the biggest regret in his life, I mean, he probably had lots of regrets, I mean, like everybody, but the thing he mentioned the most was that he's living in Alaska, he's broke down, you know, physically broke down, can't trap like he'd want to trap. And really, he got to the point where he couldn't do it at all. His knees were so bad, he couldn't even hardly ride the quad. He was in so much pain. And, and I thought, you know, I don't want that to happen to me.
No.
I don't want my daughters to have to deal with that, and listen to me piss and moan about, you know, everything like I listen to him, you know, but, so I just said, I'm going to change. And just like up one day and just said, you know what, I'm going to lose this weight and I don't give a shit. Well, either I'm going to lose or I'm going to die trying. And I just did it. And,
no, that's
right. And, you know, there's a lot of people think, so tell me, a lot of people say stuff to you, but, and some of them say, well, you know, good luck keeping it off. Well, it's been a year and a half now. And I'm pretty dogmatic. When I decide I'm going to do something, there isn't much backup on it, you know. And I'm like a fanatic on stuff. Like, I got Alaska in my mind now on trap. My brother lives up there still. And now I got Alaska on my mind. So, you know, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that this next season I'll probably end up in Alaska trapping.
Well,
same way with the weight loss.
Yeah. And I think the thing a lot of people don't realize is, you know, life goes by so quickly. And I've heard so many people say that, well, when I retire, I'm going to go out west and go trapping. They may not even be physically, or they say they're going to go out west and go big game hunting for elk or mule deer. They may not even be able to physically climb up and down those hills and mountains.
No.
No way.
No.
They think that they're going to be the same then as they are now. And that's not going to happen.
No. The thing is, everybody needs a dream, and some people are just, it's a dream for them.
Right.
But sometimes you have to, actually put motivation and physical push behind it and make that dream happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like you say, I mean, my dad always wanted to go to Alaska trapping. When he made it up there, he was too broke up to be able to do it, you know. And it's going to happen to everybody. Everybody's going to break down to a point where you can't do anything. Something's going to happen early, something's going to happen late.
Right.
I just decided didn't want that to happen to me.
No.
It could happen anyways, but, you know, only God's in control of that.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I've lost several friends in the last 5 or 6 months, and some of them didn't even seem to be physically sick, and they just dropped dead, and they were younger than me.
Yeah. I've noticed since I got over 40 that, you start seeing the people are starting to drop off. It seemed like at 40 that was about when you start noticing people you went to high school with and, you know, having this health problem, that health problem. And,
And a lot of them that retire, they have nothing to keep themselves active. And they just fall apart.
The Bible says to be absent from the body is to be with the Lord, but I still want to be here with my daughters and my grandkids, for a while yet, so I'm not... Unless I get raptured out of here, I'm here for a while.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, I've really been impressed with your lure business and your DVD business. It's just in the last, the last 3 months that I was aware that you had this business.
Oh, okay.
Because when you're in the nuisance control business, you don't have as much exposure to the fur business.
Yeah.
I went to a couple of conventions up to Everett.
Okay.
And, some of the fur trappers...
How long ago was that? Quite a while ago?
Well, I think probably 10 years ago or so.
Yeah.
Some of the fur trappers, they don't like nuisance control people.
No, they had a big meeting up there one time, and when the ADC guys were trying to get it, something with Michigan.
Yeah, they're trying to get it.
Trying to get it where you had to be.
Had to have insurance.
They had to have insurance, and that was that's with the RIF, and but I think that they got that all cleared up. I don't know. I wasn't really involved. I was there at the meeting, but like I say, I'm, if I'm going to do ADC, it's going to be like down in Texas on a big ranch where they're going to pay me, a lot of money to get me to come down there, but I don't want to go, pull a coon out of a chimney. Not that I, not that I look down on anybody that does it. It's just not my thing. I want to go kill 50 of them, and make nothing on them.
And deal with one person rather than 50 people.
Yeah, it's just my mentality. I spend a lot of time alone, and if it's not really, if it's not trappers, I really don't mesh up with them real well. So, if I was going to run a business like that, I'd be the big company where you dealt with my employee, where I didn't know that they were ruining my business for me. That would be more me. In the ADC, because I don't want to deal with homeowners. We were in the bait business for years, and it's so nice now, because for years we did the bait business. If my phone would ring, there was a problem where the people's night crawlers died, their minnows died. If my phone rang, it meant there was a problem. Mm-hmm. It ain't like that no more, and I ain't going back.
You don't miss that at all.
I'm not going back to that. I don't care. I'll live in a pup tent on state land, or even move in with my daughter. But I ain't doing that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I, with this nuisance control business, I don't answer the phone after 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Because after 9 o'clock, it's usually drunks, and they're mad about this or that. That there's a bat flew into their house, and they want me there right now. And every other word is a four-letter word.
No.
And I'm not getting paid that much to take a meeting.
No.
So I just don't need it.
No, that we're now like you're saying that happens. That used to be like it was with me. And now if my phone rings like at 7, 8 o'clock at night, it's, somebody calling to talk about trapping, or did you hear what happened with the Napa? All the stuff that I love anyway. So, it kind of plays right into my wheelhouse, So, but, no, Oh, I'm glad that you've gotten into this. I hadn't talked to you for a lot of years, and my dad would ask about you all the time. Have you seen Dick Smith? And I said, nope, I haven't seen him. And I always told him, I said, sooner or later, I thought when they had the Nationals in Kalamazoo, I sure shit, I'd see you come wandering through. But there was a lot of them did, from Michigan guys. But I didn't see him.
I I'm planning to go to the one in Escanaba. I've reserved a space, I've reserved a motel, so I guess I'm pretty firm on that.
Yeah.
As tight as I am with money. Yeah. I don't like to spend it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't afford to go to those because I'm a one-man operation.
Yeah.
And to shut down during that time span, I couldn't afford to do it.
No. That's like my buddy Norm down in Georgia. He does the ADC, and he'd go to the shows and stuff. And, him and his wife do it, and the same thing you're saying. They would leave and say they made $500 or $400 or broke even at the show. Well, they had lost $800 to $1,000 at home.
Yeah.
So, it's hard to, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, trying to do something else. And, I fully understand.
It was just business decision because I had other people that knew me. In fact, I think it's a church friend that invented those Hague's stabilizer or something.
Oh, Jeff Haggerty.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know him, but I think it's his mother or grandmother or something goes to my church.
Okay.
And she says, well, are you going to these conventions? And I said, I can't do that sort of thing. Uh-huh. I said, I used to do that, but I can't do that anymore.
You wait till you meet Jeff. Jeff, he's a good friend, and he has a good product, and he's a hell of a man. I think a lot of him. But he's a practical joker. I'm not going to say what I did to him, but up to Escanaba last year, I was standing there at his booth, and he has his whole setup with the hag brackets, but he's got a black tube, right, on his booth. And it's, you know, to show how to do the setup out in the field. I had a chew in, like I do now, and I said, I got to get going. I said, I got to go, you know, spit. And he says, I just spit right there. I said, okay. So I spit right in his display. His eyes got real big. He's like, I can't believe you did that. I said, well, you guess next time you won't tell me to. And so anyways, we go out to dinner, and I call him up. And I says, hey, I says, you want to come down here and have you know, dinner with us? I was with Harry from F&T and all them guys, and Lee Russo. And he says, no, you guys just go ahead. And I thought it was weird. Anyways, I go back to my motel room. There in a paper bag, like a lunch, it was hanging on my door. And I didn't know what it was, so I opened it up. And he had searched all around Escanaba for some dog crap and put it in that bag and hung it on my door. So this is the guy you're dealing with.
Cool.
Yeah.
We're going to have to take time out. I have an old man's bladder.
Okay.
And I've got to go to the restroom, if you'll forgive me. Can we stop for a second?
Well, we took a little break, but we're at our hour, so we're going to be closing up. But I'd like to thank Richard for being in this, doing the interview with me and having us down. Third thing is we're going to interview Richard again up to Escanaba. We'll get more into the fur industry and some of his knowledge about making sets and stuff like that. And but if you're going up to Escanaba, Richard's going to have a booth up there. Do you know what your booth number is or anything?
I think it's 113.
113. So stop by booth 113 and see Richard. And I'm sure he'll have some stories. You can tell he's good at telling stories. He's got a lot of knowledge. If you got questions or something, stop by. If you got any his old books or anything, stop by. I'm sure he'd autograph them for you. Anything you got that you want to promote that you're going to have up there for sale or anything?
Well, I thank you for the opportunity to talk with you. The one thing I am going to be promoting up there, and probably the timing is wrong, is my colony trap DVD. Not only how to use them, but how to make them.
Okay.
And I've been buying some of these DVDs that are on the market, and nobody really tells how to make them. No. I make the collapsible ones.
Oh, do you?
Where you can put a dozen of them under your arm.
That takes up a lot less space in the back of your truck.
And you know, and I trapped by canoe in a lot of these places.
Yeah.
So space was a big issue.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot about using them. So that's what I'm going to have. I'll have a video running with that, and then I'll have my books. And so anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of old friends up there.
Well, they'll definitely be there. I know they'll be glad to see you. So,
cool.
Yeah. Well, anyway, stop by booth 113 and see Richard. And I know you'll be glad to see everybody. Stop by and shake his hand.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, thank you.